So first he sends the first messenger, and then now he's sending a second messenger. He comes to them. So the second messenger repeats the same message of the first messenger. He says, the king sends greetings. So he tells him the same thing. Come join me. May come behind me and join me. So the outlooker is standing over there and he says, the second messenger also reached them. And he didn't come back. Now if you notice, by the first messenger it says, he reached ad heim to them. By the second messenger it says, ad aleihem. Why? Because the first messenger, when he approached Yehu, he approached with caution, because he had no idea what Yehu was going to do. Was he going to attack? Was he going to kill him? He had no idea. So he's approaching very cautiously. But the second messenger saw that nothing happened to the first one. So, you know, it's like, okay, it's probably safe. So that's why he went all the way to them without taking any precautions. So,
What is he afraid of when he finds out that the Yehoshua become king? He's not going to like he won't like it.
This is the king himself. This is Yoram. Yoram was the one sending the messengers. He's the king. So he's not sure if Yehu is trying to do something.
But he doesn't know that yet, that the other one's going to
He doesn't know, king. But he knows that there's something going on. Because the fact that Yehu is coming to approach him is a little suspicious.
So that's why
he's trying to find out what's happening.
Something's happening.
Right.
He don't like
Right. If something's
don't,
happening, just doesn't
like
know
what's
what.
Going on.
Right. Doesn't know what. So Yoram turns to Ahaziah and he tells him, okay, we sent two messengers, they didn't come back. We got to go take care of it ourselves. So they come, they reach Yehu, both Yoram and Ahaziah. And where do they meet? Happens to be by coincidence that they meet in the field of none other than Navais. Navais, as we remember, was the one that the previous king, he was the one who killed Navais. So now it's very opportune for them to meet this field specifically. We'll see in a minute why. Pasuk Chavez, v'yikareis Yehoram es Yehu, v'yemar shalom Yehu. So Yoram he greets Yehu and he tells him Shalom. And Yehu basically answers and he says, Shalom, really? You think you deserve a Shalom? Just like with all of the wrongdoings of your mother and all of her witchcraft, you think you deserve a Shalom? Forget about it. So now what happened was is Yoram approached Yehu all the way, but Ahaziah stayed back a little bit. He wanted to take that precaution. He didn't want to go all the way. He stayed back, just to keep a little bit of distance. And now, in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, we'll see, Vayafach Yehoram Yolav Vayonais. So Yehoram realizes right away what's going on. He realizes that Yehu is up to something. He's trying to overcome him. Vayom Ahaziah Mirma Ahaziah. So he immediately sends a warning to Ahaziah, and he yells to him. Apparently, Ahaziah was still within earshot, and he tells him, quickly, run away, because Yehu is going to try to kill us, and you better run for your life. So what does he do? So Yehu, right away, he pulls out his bow and arrow, and he shoots Yehoram between his two shoulders, in the middle of his chest, right? Center mass, that's where you aim. That's what they teach, apparently.
Good shot.
Right? Center mass. And the arrow went through his heart, and half of the arrow actually came out of his back. There was an exit wound as well. So Yoram dies on the spot. Ve'emar el bitkar shalishoi sa shlichei b'chakas den noves Israeli ki zachar ni ve'ata esreichim tzmodim achri achav aviv Hashem nasa olav esamasa asem. So Yehu turns to Bidkar, his right-hand man, and he tells him, I want you to carry the body of Yoram and throw it in the field of Novice. Why? Because me and you, we were riding together when Elio was bringing out the Nevius, right, when he's bringing his prophecy that Achav is going to be punished and all of his descendants are going to be killed. So since I'm the one who carried out half of the prophecy, you, Bidkar, my right-hand man, you should be the one to carry out the other half and actually throw the body of Yoram in the field of Novice. Because that was the Nevuah, that was the prophecy that Elio carried out, that Elio predicted. This is all Yehu quoting the prophecy of Elio. Elio said that not only Achav will be killed, but all of his sons will also be killed as well. And they'll be thrown in the field of Novice. And that's why I want you, Bidkar, my right-hand man, to carry it out. You should be the one. V'achazi melech Yehuda ra, so Achazi melech Yehuda, he got the warning. Yoram yelled at him and he screamed that he was trying to put forward this political coup and take over the kingship. So he got that warning, and he saw right away how Yehu killed Yoram. So he knows, okay, bad news, I got to get out of here. So he's running. He runs through the field. So they found him in the Shomrei. That's where they found him. And Yehu sent messengers after, to chase him, to find him, and to actually kill him. So he was killed over there. And after he was killed, they carried him, they brought him to Ir David, where he was buried, together with his father. Because after all, he was a king. And he was not part of the family of Achav, so he deserved a more dignified burial. Okay, now we're going to go to see, so now we saw how the household of Achav was killed, all the males were killed. So now what we're going to see how Izebel, what happened to her? Because if you remember, she was really the mastermind behind this whole operation. She was the one who convinced Achav to go ahead and kill Novice, right? To hire two witnesses and that are going to lie and concoct this whole testimony that never was. So now we're going to see how that's going to be carried out. She also deserves to be killed. Pasuk Chavtes continues. Richard, we're holding in Malachim Beis Parak Tes, Pasuk Chavtes. Okay. Yeah? Mishnah Sechat Asrei, Shana L'Yoram Ben Achav, Malach Achazia Al Yehuda. So when Yoram was 11 years king, in the 11th year of his reign, Achazia was king over Yehuda. Now, earlier, we mentioned that Achazia was king during the 12th year of Yoram. Why does it say over here that he was king in the 11th year? Because Yoram, his father, right, remember, not to be confused between Yoram and Yehoram, two different people. Yoram, the father of Achazia, got sick, he was ill. And Achazia's son actually reigned during his father's life, which apparently was pretty common. Many times if the father knew that his days were numbered, and he was old, or he was sick, whatever it was, and he wanted to make sure that his son would continue the reign, would get the reign after he died. Now, if you waited until after his death, that might be too late, because one of the generals, one of the powerful people in the kingdom, might take over and dethrone his son. So therefore, it was a very common custom for a father to anoint his son during his life. to ensure the fact that his son will actually reign after his death. So that's exactly what happened over here. And Yoram, so since Yoram got sick in the 11th year of Ahaziah, and then after he died, that's when he became the full-fledged king, which was the 12th year. Now, why is this detail important? The reason why the Navi is telling that us over here is because the point is that Yoram did not become king with the support of the people. The rest of the people were not actually happy with him becoming king. The only reason he actually was successful in becoming king was only because he reigned during the life of his father. Because they could not rebel against his father, because his father was still alive. He was sick, yes, but he was still alive. So they couldn't rebel against him. That's why they couldn't do anything once he became king. But it was clear that they didn't want him. And this is, why is the Navi telling us over here? Because now we understand why his army, Ahaziah, didn't come to fight with him. And you would think, if his army, his men were loyal to him, they would come and support him. Right? Yehu is trying to kill him. He's chasing after him. You would assume that his loyal men would come running and try to fight off the intruders. But no. Because they did not really want him to be king. Right? He only became king by default, because his father wanted to become king. Sorry?
By succession,
yeah. Not only by succession, because he became king during the time of his father. His father was still alive. That's why he was able to continue the kingship. Therefore, his army were not loyal to him, and they let him just be killed, and no one would actually fight his fight. Because once they saw that, you know, he's got a weakness, then they just sat back and enjoyed the show. Okay, in any case, so let's continue. Pasuk Lamed. Vayava Yehu Yisrael. So Yehu comes to Israel, which is where the palace. Remember, if you remember correctly, the whole plan of Yezebel to kill Navis was for what? Was because the king Ahav wanted to build a palace in Israel. He wanted to build it not only in Israel. He wanted to build it in the ground of Navis,
yeah, right.
Exactly in the field of Navis. So Yehu is coming to that same palace that was built over the field of Navis. The Zevel Shama, the Tosam Apuchei Nea, but Tita Vesreisha, but Tashkav Badachalai. So Zevel heard that Yehu is coming, and she knows exactly what he's coming for. She already heard that he killed both kings. He killed Yoram, and he also killed Ahaziah. She knows that she's next. So what would you try to do, right? If you were a queen and you knew that the enemy of the king is coming for you, what would you do?
Run.
Commit suicide? Run? So she didn't do any of that. She didn't commit suicide. She didn't run.
Mm-hmm. She acted like a queen.
Yeah, but that's not going to really help if someone's trying to kill you. Right. So what did she
do? Try to act with dignity.
Yes.
But she was the queen, and she was a princess in the father's house.
Right. Right. So let's continue. Yehu Baba Shah, Retimer Shalom Zimri Yehoyer Gadoinov. So when she sees Yehu coming through the gate, right, she's got a little security camera over there. She has her, you know, the screen, the ring thing. Yeah, that's the new thing today. Apparently, so she had her security system. She sees Yehu coming through the gate, and what does she say? She turns to her man and she says, "Ashalim Zimri Hayragadainov." This person is like Zimri, who killed his master. Meaning, what is she trying to allude? She's trying to allude to the unloyal aspect of Yehu. To say, "Oh, this person killed his master, right? He's not really worthy of becoming king." Right, it's not like he was a prince or something, or he even came from family of kings. He has some kind of, you know, a lineage. He's got nothing, right? He just managed to kill his master, and that's why he became king. So there's nothing really that's worthy about him. Based upon Avel Chalein, V'yemer mi ti mi. Be'eshkifa elav shnayim shloisha sarisim. So she's trying to gather some men. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. Why is she saying Zimri? Right? Because Zimri also did the same thing. He killed his master. But after he killed his master, the people did not want to follow him. So he managed to kill the king, but he won the battle but lost the war. Because once he killed the king, then people were not loyal to him. So she's trying to indicate that Yehu is in the same position. Just because he managed to kill the king doesn't necessarily mean that the men are going to follow him. Right? They might not be loyal to him. That's why she's mentioning Zimri. So she's trying to get to gather some support by her men. So she says, you know, who's with me? Who's with me? But no one is with her. V'yayimra shimtua. So she turns, Yehu turns to the men. Yehu's saying, who is with me? And she's trying to see if her men are going to support her, or are they going to support him? Yehu. V'yayimra shimtua. So he tells the men of Izebel, throw out the window, v'yishmetua. In fact, they throw out the window, v'yiz midama lakir v'lasusim v'yir mesena. Her blood spills on the wall and on the horses, and she gets
crushed. She didn't fly. She flew till she hit the bottom.
Right, she flew after she hit the bottom. Right. She hit the bottom, her neshama flew to Gehenna. That's where she flew. Yes, Yehu went ahead and he crushed her with his feet as a sign of disrespect. Pasuk Lamadal, Vayavay Vayocha Vayesh. So he comes and eats a meal. Vayomer Pikdu Na Esarur Azayis VeKivrua Kibas Malachi. After he eats, he says, okay, now it's time to marry her. Why is it time to bury her? Because after all,
she's a daughter of a king.
Exactly, she's a princess.
After all that degrading,
right? So he's degrading her and he's disrespecting her because she did many avers. She deserves to be punished, and to be punished, she should be deserved to be killed in a disrespectful way. But at the end of the day, she does deserve to be buried. Because she, even though she's not Jewish, she came. She came from. She's a daughter of a king of a non-Jewish king. But still, she does have to be respected. Right? You have to respect all kings, Jewish and non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why he doesn't say, you know, she's a queen, you know, her husband was the king Achav. Why doesn't he say that? Because she was the one to cause the whole downfall of Achav. She, because she caused his downfall, he doesn't address the fact that she's his queen. Because Achav was punished for what she did. Okay. V'yelchu l'kavra. So his men go out to find her body and to bury her. And so they went, when they go to bury her, apparently the dogs came. They dragged her to the place where Novis was killed. To the place where Novis was killed in his field, and because it says Makom Sher Dam Novis, with the place where the blood of Novis, so too Izebel's blood will spill in the same place. That's why she had to be killed over there specifically. So the dogs dragged her to that place, and apparently they ate her whole entire body. The only thing that were left is the head, or the skull, really, and the feet, and the hands. Pretty gory. Now, first of all, a few things.
Why did they leave her hands and her feet?
Right. So first of all, yeah. Why did they leave her hands and her feet? So I think
last week.
Right. I think you mentioned that she was paid, she was given a reward for what she did with her hands, right? You mentioned this, Leo, that she was given a reward for the fact that she was clapping for the kalas when during the day of their wedding. She was given reward for that, and that's why her hands were left and were not eaten by the dogs.
Oh, the feet too.
Yeah, feet too, yeah.
She danced.
Why? Because she would dance, yeah, she would dance as well in front of the kalas.
And she used to shake her head.
Right.
You know.
She used to shake her head, right, and clap her hands and dance.
When you dance, you know, you make somebody happy. So that's how you...
Right. Now, so once they found those parts of the body, they didn't bury her. Because most of her body was eaten. And... Now, since the shear that causes someone to become tummy, causes someone to be impure, is most of the, it has got to be most of the body, right? Rav Binyana or Rav Minyana? Rav Binyan is the spine, the legs, and the thighs, and that was taken from there. So that part can't become something else to be impure, to become tame. And also the number of bones that were left is not enough to become most of the bones in the body. She didn't have most of the bones of the body were gone. Because most of the bones on the body were gone, therefore they didn't bury her because it wouldn't cause something else to become impure. Because the leftover bones, whatever was left, the skull, the hands, and the feet, because that was the only thing that was left over, that would not cause anything else to become impure, therefore they didn't bother to bury it. Because typically the reason why you bury a body is because you don't want someone else to walk over it and become impure. But since that was not the case over here, since most of the body was gone and wouldn't become anyone else to be impure, that's why they didn't bury it. And this is the nevuah of the Navi coming to fruition and saying, there we go. Now...
But this is like the Jewish approach in our works or not?
If, for example, no, now we bury everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For example, if during the war there is only a remain of soldiers. Still buried?
Yeah, they're still buried. In fact, there's a unit in Israel called Zaka.
Zaka, yeah.
You heard of them? Yeah.
Yeah, we had a fundraiser here for them.
Right. What they do is they have a very difficult job. They go to any terrorist attack location, and they have to go around collecting all the body parts, right, and the blood, everything, right? They have to collect everything and bury it. Mm-hmm. That's their job. They have a terrible job.
They try to identify who is who?
Yeah, they try to identify who is who. Yeah, sure. I think today it's much easier with DNA and all that. But back in the day, I'm sure it was much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. It sounded difficult still with the 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thing. What's the name of the founder of Zaka?
Oh, Yehuda Meshizav. Yeah, that was him. Yes. So that's why they didn't bury Ezevel, because this was part of the prophecy of the Navi. The Navi said that not only are they going to be killed, not only are they going to be killed where they killed Navis over his field, but no one's going to bury them. This is part of the Nevuah. And that's why they didn't bury her. And again, this is the Nevuah of the Navi coming to fruition. Okay. Let's finish the parak. Veyeshuvu veyagidu lo veyemar dvar Hashem hu asher dibur biyadav Eliyahu atish bileymar bechelek Yisrael yochel hakovim etz b'sar Yizevel. And when they found her body, they come and report back to Yehu and they tell him, this is where we found the body and this is how we found it. And he says, oh, this was in fact the Nevuah. There we go. The Nevuah of the Navi came to fruition. It came true because the Navi predicted that Eliyahu predicted that they're going to eat Yizevel, the dogs will eat the body of Yizevel in Chelek Yisrael, exactly in the field where Nevis was killed. Vaisa Nivlas Yizevel Kedemen of Pnei HaSodeh Chelek Yisrael Shel Layoim Ruzeis Yizevel. And it was, the body was desecrated to such a extreme degree that they couldn't even identify the body. Right, obviously DNA would probably be able to identify the body, but back then, just by looking at the body, they were not able to identify the body. And that's meaning the fact that the head was separated, and apparently the dogs even ate the head. There was only the skull left. They couldn't even, no one couldn't even recognize her. And this is part of the punishment for Yizevel for causing such harm and tragedy to the Jewish people and to Nevis specifically. Okay, guys.